Hello.
Hello.
Welcome back to the podcast. I am your host, Dr. Jeremy Goldberg, and today's episode is a forest fire combined with a bonfire wrapped up in a shiny, fuzzy bow because it is the one and only Sylvie Hukassian. Sylvie is a relationship coach who works with individuals and couples. She helps people to create connection and establish healthy boundaries. And in this episode, we tackle all of the things. We talk about intimacy. We talk about holding space, how to communicate more effectively. We talk about the different types of avoidance and anxiety and how they relate to connection. We talk about so many things, actually. It is a rampaging conversation. There's so much good stuff in there. She's really good at what she does. If you are in a relationship, if you've ever been in a relationship, or you intend to be in a relationship, you're going to like this podcast, and you're going to get better at all of the things that you need to get better at in order to attract love, to keep love, and to be a better human. And that's it, really. Enjoy the podcast. You can follow Sylvie on Instagram at Sylvie Hukassian, Hukassian. You can check her out. She has some online programs about boundaries, about communication. She's just great, and I think you're really going to like this. So enjoy. It's working.
Yeah, made it weird.
Sylvie Hukassian. Sylvie Hukassian. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. That's a good try.
It was a valiant effort. Sylvie Hukassian.
That's much better. You're getting warmer.
I apologize for my accent. But I'm really glad you're here, and I'm so excited to talk to you.
I am equally excited, and I love the introduction. That's the best part.
It was quite random, but entirely authentic.
Exactly.
So, Sylvie, for those who are not blessed enough to follow your genius on Instagram, like, or know you, who are you? What's your deal? What are you passionate about?
Yes, my absolute most challenging question to ever answer. But I will do my best. I am a therapist, so I do a lot of work with singles and couples. I was born in the Middle East, and I moved to the United States from Saudi Arabia and Syria when I was 4. So I've always kind of had two cultures in my brain and really struggled to identify completely with either one. Mm. And I love bringing validation and comfort to people in my work, and hope that's something that I will always be known for. And that's the best way that I could probably summarize it really quickly.
Yeah. And so how did you get into this area? Like, what was it about, I guess, relationships? Would that be the broader topic that you're interested in?
Yes.
Or so intimate personal development? Yes. Intimate relationships.
Yeah. I would say for me, it's more couples, relationships, intimate relationships in general. Mm-hmm. I grew up in a culture that really didn't talk about this stuff. You know, I'm Middle Eastern, Armenian, and Arabic, and it's just not something that we had access to. And I think coming here and being a very sensitive person, I identify as an HSP, and really not knowing how to communicate needs and relationships.
And an HSP is a
highly sensitive person. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so you sorry to interrupt you, but
it's okay.
So you associate being an HSP, which means that you what?
Which means that I get overwhelmed very quickly, get overstimulated very fast, can feel shame very quickly. And also I'm an avoidantly attached person. So you have these two extremes in me, and learning how to kind of bridge those people that probably don't know what the hell an avoidantly attached person is either. So we might have to do some digging today together, Jeremy.
I love digging. I love spelunking. I love cave diving, etc. Bring it.
So for those of you that don't know what the avoidantly attachment stuff is, I work primarily with the attachment styles. And that's a framework that really helps us understand how we bond to our caregivers or parents as kids, which becomes the template of how we attach in intimate relationships. So for me, and we're also influenced by our adult relationships as well. It's not just our parents. So for me, I've been someone that's very kind of, I calm myself, I soothe myself. I haven't really relied on others to do a lot of that work, you know? So exposing me and my sensitivities has been very much hidden for most of my life. So I've really, really wanted to help people find a way to be vulnerable, to bridge connection, but in ways that are still very honoring of that template, you know, like not pushing them to go so far that they are, you know, violating themselves and their natural way of being, but helping them to find a bridge that helps them feel more connected. So it's coming, that comes from my own challenges.
I think it's a really underappreciated idea that we as humans, we learn how to love and we learn how to connect. And we often do that as children or as early adults, right? And until I realized this and learned this idea, it was just like, oh shit. Wow, my childhood actually influences the way that I show up in relationships and friendships and as a boyfriend, as a man. This was a wild concept to me. And one thing that I've really recognized is the way that I was loved as a kid or the relationships that I saw as a child taught me what love and connection was or what version of love and connection was, right? Mm-hmm. And so then I often was seeking to mirror those things, for better or worse, in the relationships that I was having as an adult.
It's amazing how much we recreate the same things, even when we have that awareness. It's like, wait a minute, I should know this is not the best thing for me to do. Why am I so compelled to do this? And, you know, really breaking those patterns is so hard.
Yeah. So why do we do that? Why do we repeat the same kind of things? If we, so for example, grow up in a family where the dad's really angry and we don't talk about anything and we keep to ourselves and then there's all these issues, then we grow up and we find a partner that mirrors exactly that. Is that simply because it feels comfortable? Or
I think that's a big part of it, that it feels very familiar, and we always will gravitate towards familiar just because that's what's easier for our brain to be with, even if it's not the ideal situation, but also that we're always being called to more and more healing. You know, it's like we get triggered by the same, even if we leave a relationship and enter another one, our triggers are going to follow us everywhere until we are willing and courageous enough to actually look at what the information is. And, you know, that's why exposing our triggers and our vulnerabilities and the things that are required for that healing, it's so important that we are very picky about who we're bringing those things to, because they can either help us heal them or we can just be partners and just triggering each other for eternity and never actually do any meaningful work to actually change any of that.
Yeah, it reminds me of this quote by Kyle Cease, I think. And he said, like, an argument is when my triggers and your triggers are having a conversation. It was something like that, where we both have to be triggered in some way to have an argument or a fight, right?
Yeah, definitely.
And so how do you decide... Oh, hang on. We're getting ahead of ourselves.
Okay.
Back to attachment styles.
Okay.
So you were mentioning attachment styles and you're anxious avoidant. Are there others?
So there's four different kinds. There's secure, there's anxious, there's dismissive avoidant, and then there's fearful avoidant. So I identify mostly with the fearful avoidant. And I often say this, again, as a disclaimer, you do not have to fit in one box. This is not a one box thing. You can relate to the behaviors of all of them or two of them. And so it's like, you know, because I get that question all the time, like, what if I've, you know, relate to both? And like, it's okay. Just pay attention to the behaviors that are not helpful, that are actually really impacting your relationships in unhealthy ways. And those are the things you want to work on rather than trying to shove yourself in the box.
That's a big one.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's very easy for us to just identify with a certain identity, right? With love languages as an example of,
exactly.
Oh no, I'm physical touch. Like, yeah, but that means also that you probably like getting gifts and you like quality time and you like going on adventures and service and all that.
Absolutely.
So the various attachment styles, I feel like in the reading I've done that this secure attachment seems to be like the warm oatmeal, like not too hot, not too cold. Like we should probably shoot for this kind of secure attachment style.
I like the oatmeal version a lot.
I just ate oatmeal for breakfast. I think maybe that's why it's in my head. Of like, that one seems like the balanced kind of sweet zone to shoot for. And I feel like the anxious is on one far too side, is on one side too far. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Well, it's like we have this assumption that people that are secure are just like really happy and relationships are perfect and they never fight and they're like, oh my God, I just want to be secure. And that's not the reality of what a securely attached person is. A securely attached person still gets triggered constantly in their relationship. The difference is they articulate what their needs are behind those triggers, behind the arguments, and they are able to express what's happening in a more self-responsible way. Whereas you have the avoidants who are hiding their vulnerabilities and completely shutting down. And then should I go into what they are just for people to clarify, Jeremy? Would that be helpful?
Yeah, let's dive in.
Okay. I'll make it as quick snapshot as possible. So I shared a little bit about the secure. Secure people grew up with a parent or caregiver. And when I refer to caregiver, I'm saying the person emotionally responsible for regulating us. It can be mom, it can be dad, it can be uncle, it can be grandparent, whoever was that person for us. They were very tuned in. They were able to recognize when we needed comfort. They were able to recognize when we needed space. And that's a distinction that's not often talked about. It's not just that they were there when we needed love. They also were able to see us, oh my God, I'm getting overwhelmed, back the F off. You know, they can, and as an infant, if a parent is really tuned in well, they can see that. And so they become adults that feel very, very tuned into. They're able to access and express their emotions more easily. It doesn't mean they don't want to struggle sometimes, but they're able to work through it and not be intimidated by relationships. And then, so looking at it as a spectrum, you have the anxious, which is kind of next to secure. They're the ones that had some emotional regulating from the parent. The parent was available, responsive, and then sometimes they weren't. So it's like there was like this push-pull, you know, I don't know if my parent is actually going to ever be here. I'm afraid they're there sometimes. So I've kind of relied on them, but then they've backed off. So I don't know what to expect. These are the people that enter relationships feeling terrified when there's any kind of glimmer of loss of connection. You know, they're just like panic, and it's like, you know, 911 goes off in their nervous system. And they do a lot of the protesting behavior where they act out or try to make their partner jealous. They have a hard time just being really direct about their needs. And then you have the fearful avoidant, which is somebody that was more potentially abused or really violated or invaded upon in inappropriate ways. So they had to learn to not be trustful in adult relationships. And they still had access to their parent in ways that the dismissive avoidant didn't, but they crave relationships, but they still struggle. They have a lot of high anxiety. They tend to run away. They don't know how to be present and just kind of, you know, staying put in that when the intensity starts to get really strong. And then you have the dismissive avoidant all the way on the other side, which is somebody that was fairly neglected. They were not checked in with. They kind of had nobody really, you know, asking them questions, nobody engaging them. And so they had to shut down and take care of themselves. You know, they're the one in the relationships where they're like the CEO of a company. They're super successful a lot of times. But when it comes to intimate relationships, they have a really hard time because not only do they not acknowledge that they have needs, but they tend to dismiss the needs of their partners. Like, oh, if I don't have needs, why the hell do you have needs? You know, this isn't the way that this is supposed to be. And so, you know, recognizing how we end up hurting our relationship or our partner is, in my work, the most important piece, you know, without going into shame and beating ourselves up about it. But, you know, for me, I like to use myself an example. I identify with a lot of the avoidance stuff. So I can shut down very quickly or shut people out if I'm under stress. And so, you know, I make the joke of, you know, before I met my partner, I went on 300 probably dates. And I was like, why am I not connecting with anybody? There was no actual vulnerability coming out of me. It was like fake vulnerability. It was like showy, you know, just like to make it seem like, or I thought I was, but I wasn't actually revealing myself in a way that was meaningful. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And so how do you...
I just gave you a lot, Jeremy.
That was like an online program.
Oh, no.
No, in a beautiful way. I mean, I'm a dork for all this stuff. Like, I love learning. I love curiosity, all of it. So just to summarize briefly the four types, once again, you would say secure, dismissive avoidant,
Is that right? Fearful avoidance. What's the fourth one?
Anxious.
Anxious, of course. So it's like a spectrum, anxious and then secure and then avoidant somewhat.
So secure would be the most secure. Anxious is the next one, then fearful, avoidant, and then dismissive.
Avoidant. Okay. Yeah. And so we want to kind of get curious about who we are and how we fit into these various patterns so that we can understand ourselves and in doing so understand how we show up in relationships. And once you have that knowledge, then how do you kind of move towards being more secure? Like if you're like, I'm thinking of someone listening that's saying, oh, I am absolutely avoidant. How do I start moving towards secure?
So it's very different for the different attachment styles, you know, they all require very different things. So that's why it's like when, you know, it's like, I always tell my clients or when I'm writing posts, I'm always trying to frame it in like, cause it's really easy to see posts on social media and to try to apply ourselves to that exact way of being. Right. But if I do something in this way, when I'm avoidantly attached, that's not necessarily going to be good for me. Or if I'm anxiously attached, if I'm, you know, so it's putting it in a context that works for each of us as individuals. So with an avoidant person, with myself, for example, learning to be vulnerable with safe people, you know, not just exposing my vulnerability with just anybody and just, okay, let me not, I know I have to be vulnerable. Let me just get it out there. Let me just blast it into the universe. No, being really mindful of who I'm choosing to be with and then paying attention. And I usually say, you know, there's five different qualities of people that make them really unsafe to be vulnerable with. And it's important for us to pay attention to how somebody is also responding to our vulnerability. So we're not just like robots and just dumping stuff. And well, I thought you're not supposed to be attached to what you're sharing. You're just supposed to, you know, put it out there. That's not actually helpful or healthy. Know what I mean?
Or real.
Right? Yeah, totally.
And so this touches on that topic that we talked about before we started recording, this idea of healthy vulnerability, which I'm so fascinated to hear your ideas around. But I guess, first of all, we should probably, like, how do you define vulnerability for those listening? That, because it's a big buzzword and you hear it all the time, like boundaries, you know? What's your definition of vulnerability?
So vulnerability is like taking a risk. It's exposing a part of us that we might not normally expose. And it's things that make us feel uncomfortable. And it's like only we know when we're doing that, right? Like only you inside of you know if you're genuinely being vulnerable. You might be sharing something, Jeremy, to the world that everyone else can be like, wow, that's vulnerable. You know, you write a post and they're like, thank you so much for being so vulnerable. And it's like, you might be thinking, oh, that actually was no big deal. Just like eating my oatmeal this morning, you know?
That's exactly right.
But it's like, so you're the only one that can actually gauge when you're in it. You might be so free in your art. You know, you might be so free to be able to express certain things. But then when it comes to an intimate relationship, like, okay, what is actually going to be a risk for me that can set me up to getting, you know, feeling rejected, to feeling hurt, to feeling something rather than just always playing it safe and not exposing anything that's going to require me to feel, that's going to allow me to feel connected to this other person. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Totally. And I think just touching on the reciprocal of what you just described, whereby people might say to me, wow, that's so vulnerable. But to me, it's not. Mm. Right.
Yes.
And the reverse is also true. Often we judge things as, oh, that's not very vulnerable. But to the person sharing, it's incredibly vulnerable. Right?
Beautiful,
Right? And so I think you see this online sometimes as well, where, or in conversations even, or especially in relationship, where somebody is sharing something and you'll hear it and you might hear it and think, like, that's not a big deal at all. But to them, it's a huge deal and it's a really brave thing and it's really scary and they're being very vulnerable in that moment. And I think it's really powerful to acknowledge the share from their perspective, right?
Beautiful, beautiful distinction you just made, Jeremy. Absolutely.
And because, so I look back at some of the stuff I shared when I first started writing, for example, where I was being vulnerable. But I look back at that stuff now and I'm like, huh, that's cute. Like, that's not that bad. Like, that was not that hard because I'm perpetually trying to stay on that edge, right? Of like share more intimate moments, go deeper, like rip my soul out of my chest and just throw it on the internet, like perpetually pushing. And so looking back at things, things in the past that I shared that seem so hard and so difficult and so challenging aren't at all anymore. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of like a muscle that you practice repetitions with. And that the more that you are vulnerable, it doesn't necessarily get easier, but I feel like in my experience, you get better at being uncomfortable in those vulnerable moments.
Exactly. Totally. Like you build a higher tolerance almost for, oh, I know this feeling. I'm going to be okay. Even though I've survived before, but even though it's super uncomfortable to say this or share this, I'll be okay.
Yeah. Yeah. It's that.
Yeah.
And I think that's another misconception. So the first misconception you touched upon is that like relationship therapists and coaches have perfect lives and they never have conflict. They just live on a cloud and dance with unicorns. And it's all just sunshine, right? And that's nonsense.
And it's amazing that that can even be, like, how we can even think that, you know? Like, what part of us puts people on such a pedestal that it's like almost like we need someone to have this certainty so we can feel better, right? Mm.
Yeah, I think, though, personally, I feel it's because online especially, we're often sharing the lessons and the wins and the like, oh, you know, this is so great. And we're very rarely sharing the, hey, me and my partner got in a really gnarly fight last night and here's what happened, right? Because that's very vulnerable.
Definitely. Right? Thank God it's changing now. You see much more people that are actually exposing more of the behind the scenes. Maybe not the details and the exact thing that happened, but the theme and the context of this is the fighting is normal.
Yeah.
Two of my favorite therapists, John and Julie Gottman, what I love about what they do in one of their workshops is they actually process like a fight, an argument in front of the audience as they're leading it. And I just think that's like, oh my God, it's so brilliant. Because they're not saying they don't fight. They're offering tools, but they're doing, it's like they're bridging the fact that, okay, this is the reality. We, you know, I think she said like John Gottman like slept on the couch last night and like, you know, I'm like, yes.
And to those who don't know, like the Gottmans are like the godfathers of all this stuff. They're like, they know their stuff.
Totally.
Like they teach the therapist that teach the therapist that teach the therapist kind of thing. And it's so refreshing to hear that they have fights, you know?
Absolutely.
It's like, yeah, John Gottman was in the doghouse last night. Like, oh, what? He knows everything. Going back to this idea of like healthy vulnerability versus oversharing versus attention seeking.
Yes.
How do you look at healthy vulnerability? Like, what is that to you?
Well, I think what I would love to frame before going into that is also this notion that, you know, there's different contexts for our vulnerability. Even if we're somebody that exposes vulnerability on social media and other places, there's always going to be a higher level of risk when we're in intimate relationship, no matter what. The person that we are starting to actually depend on and commit to and relate on such a deep level, it's always going to feel scarier to be vulnerable there. You know, even if it feels scary everywhere else, the level of rejection that we can feel with somebody that we potentially are starting to love and want to be with, that's really like, that's a hard kind of vulnerability to lean into, you know? So while we're in the dating phase, we want to definitely assess how people are responding to our vulnerability. And so there's five different qualities that to me make somebody very unsafe to be vulnerable with. That first one is somebody that invalidates your vulnerability. Oh, that's not actually a thing to be upset about. People are dying out there, you know, like really just like completely taking away and shattering something that's really important to you that you're exposing. The second one would be minimizes it. Oh, it's not that bad. If you really think about it, you know, this is somebody that tends to be more logical, that tries to give you perspective before they've actually empathized with what you're saying. We've never done that, right? Never. None of us.
No.
Never. No.
Doesn't ring a bell.
Doesn't ring a bell.
No.
The third kind is somebody that never shares their own vulnerability. So it's almost like a one-sided dynamic in the relationship. You might be sharing. They might be responding really well and actually be really loving and, you know, caring about what you're saying, but they never take any risks ever back to meet you. So the connection can't really form, or it's just one-sided. The other one is they judge you. You know, you share something really powerful and you could just see it on their face. They're totally judging you. They might not even say anything, but you could see it. And it's just that awful sinking in your stomach feeling like, oh no, this person just took what I'm saying. And not only are they not empathizing with me, they're like almost like condemning me for what I'm sharing and making me out to feel like a really bad person. And then the last one that I would say is they use it against you. So you share something vulnerable and a week later, you know, I think this happens a lot of times. I get this a lot from men, you know, like I shared my truth with my woman and she totally used it against me. And like, I feel like I can't share anything anymore. This, again, I want to be sensitive to this can happen, you know, whatever gender you are, but I definitely noticed because men have been socialized to, you know, minimize their vulnerability in general. I think it takes a different kind of experience to finally reveal. So when that is being used against them, it can be terrible.
Absolutely. And I think that's such a pivotal point to reinforce and highlight. And it relates to something that I just said about to somebody sharing something, it might be the hardest, scariest, most vulnerable thing in the world. And to you receiving it, it's fucking nothing. It's not a big deal. And especially in my experience, at least with women who have their whole lives been taught mostly on average, yes, I understand this is a sweeping generalization, blah, blah, blah. Don't come at me on the internet. But women, right? They've been raised to express emotions, to feel things, to be intuitive, all of these things, to talk about how they're feeling. Yeah. And you get in partnership with a man who has been taught the exact opposite his entire life, who doesn't actually have the language to describe what he's actually going on in his body. And it can be an extremely vulnerable moment just to say, look, I feel sad. Like to a dude, like that could be a hugely pivotal, brave, like scary, terrifying thing, right? And yeah. So I think it's a matter of creating that safe space and encouraging that and even affirming it. Like, hey, you know, thank you. I feel so much closer to you. Well done. I'm proud of you.
Yes. Totally, absolutely. You know, especially if somebody is more avoidantly attached, they might never share. And like you said, they finally share one thing that's small to you. But it's like, if you're not praising their effort, you really think they're going to be sharing more with you? No, it doesn't work like that.
Yeah, you're just like, well, that didn't work. That was useless and that was a waste of time. I'll just go back to what I've done my whole life that I know is like keeps me alive.
Absolutely. Well, and it just really speaks to that part of us that it's like, how do we know? Because if my vulnerability looks this way, right? I know when I'm being vulnerable, but you might not even think I'm being vulnerable, right? You're like, she's just sharing her day or whatever, you know? So it's like almost like, it's so important that we're even prefacing with, hey, I'm about to share something kind of uncomfortable, you know, or I really need your support. And that's why it's like when we're not careful with the container that we're sharing our vulnerability with, we don't have that ability to kind of set ourselves up to win a little bit more. You know, it's like, that's why it's like when we're dating and we have somebody, you know, in the earlier phase is not responding well, we can still say something, you know, if what they're doing is not that bad. Sometimes we get triggered by someone's vulnerability. Sometimes we get overwhelmed or brings up something that brings up shame in ourselves. But we have to be very, very careful and say something right away and acknowledge that, hey, I just did a really shitty job. I want to come back and redo what just happened because I got so flabberglasted, whatever, you know? And coming back and not just leaving it, it's like, but again, that takes a level of self-awareness that we have to be willing to cultivate, you know?
It's so true. And that maturity to own your own shit. And I think it even... a further step backwards is almost being aware of what's happening inside of you in the moment of like feeling what's coming up as you're listening to someone tell you things and recognizing it and being like, I can't have this conversation right now. Like, and sometimes I feel, and I'm happy to be wrong on this, but that is one of the best things you can say to someone is I value you. I hear you, but like, I can't have this chat right now. I need to go and punch something. I need to go for a walk. I need to cry. I need to whatever process. And like, let's circle back when I'm feeling like a sane human being again.
Yeah, absolutely. You have every right to need that space to kind of be with our vulnerability sometimes before we can then bring it to someone, you know? Absolutely.
So these five I don't know. In my head, I'm thinking them as red flags for unsafe receiving a vulnerability. How would you describe
it? That's a beautiful way of framing it, actually. Okay. I would say five qualities in people. Okay, that's a horrible way of saying this. Five qualities that make someone unsafe to be vulnerable with. But I love the way you just said it. What did you say? Five red flags?
Red flags.
Yeah.
Like, hey, if you are being vulnerable and you have any of these five things that... If your vulnerability is being received in such a way that it's one of these five things, I would say that's kind of a red flag, at least in that communication, at least in that moment, or perhaps in that entire relationship. So absolutely. What do people do with that? If they're listening, they're like, oh, my partner does three of those five things.
All of them. They do them all.
They do them all. My partner is
don't get rid of them.
Oil flush is the whole thing. You know?
Okay. So that's such an important question. And the reality of the word is that we're human, you know, where I invalidate my partner all the time when I'm triggered. That's the reality. And I have to be able to own it, you know, especially when it comes to the perspective piece. I'm great with being with his emotions, but sometimes when I'm triggered, I just want to be right. And I need my reality to be right over his. And that's a terrible thing to do. And so it's two-sided. It's the partner that feels, again, it's almost like a boundary violation, right? If we feel like we're being invalidated, it's important for the person that's doing that to be self-aware. But if they're not, we get to set the boundary. This is, again, where boundaries and vulnerabilities are very intertwined. And speaking up, hey, I noticed yesterday when I shared something, I felt really invalidated. It felt really shitty. I really need you to acknowledge that. And if we have a partner that is not willing to have those repair conversations, that's where it starts to become a bigger red flag. Mm. It's not that we can't screw up. We all mess up, especially when we're in the conflict, when we're fighting, we're going to step on each other's toes. You know, my biggest one is don't invalidate my feelings. You know, it's logic, I can, you know, my feelings when that happens, like I have learned to come back to the person and say, you know, I didn't like it when, you know, I really need you to make what feels hurtful for me important to you. I need to feel like you care about my feelings. And then paying attention to how that person responds. If they're trying to confuse you, you know, when you get confused and you're like, wait a minute, this person's right, actually. What I'm saying is not right. You get confused, right? Mm-hmm. That's not a good response. We want somebody to be able to acknowledge that. And if they're not, there's a likeliness that they have a lot of shame, which is very common, because that's a way of, that's one of the defenses against shame, is actually going around the subject. So if you have a partner that's doing that, it's almost like, go back to your point. Hey, I don't know what's going on for you. I get that you're having a reaction to what I'm saying, but I'm going to say what I need again. I really need my experience to be validated. And just go back. Don't just abandon yourself because your partner is kind of not willing to see it. And give them some space. Sometimes that helps. You know, we want them to respond perfectly right in that moment, you know, like, mm-hmm. Give it to me right now. But just give them some space. Give them a day. See if they come back to you when they're calmer and they've had some time to process and actually think about that. Mm. And if there's no ability to ever acknowledge when somebody is doing this, yeah, that's a red flag. I mean, sometimes that requires getting couples therapy or individual therapy to better what we need, but it's not sustainable, Jeremy. It's just not.
And so when you say you need your feelings validated, what is an example of that? Or what's a sentence or two that could mean that? Like, what do you want to hear in response? Mm.
When I'm feeling invalid.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So what that would look like is, you know, your feelings are really important to me. I care about your feelings. Your feelings matter. So it's almost like in the same way of like when you're validating somebody's perspective, when you're trying to make them wrong, your opinion matters to me. You know, it all depends on our childhood, right? Some people have had their experience, their thoughts really invalidated. Some have had their feelings. It just depends on what is our sensitive vulnerability points. And so paying attention to what people. And so for me, I really care about you. The details don't matter anymore. I just want you to know that I'm here. I care. It's that care. It's like, we want to feel like when we're hurting, that our partner cares about us. Otherwise, what the heck are we doing in the relationship, Jeremy? You know?
Yeah. I don't know.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Eating oatmeal by herself.
I know. I want to share my oatmeal with someone.
Yeah.
One process or one strategy that I've heard or read about previously is like, is sharing the other person's perspective, right? So saying like, that sounds really challenging. It sounds to me like you're feeling really scared and really disrespected. Mm-hmm. Something like this. Does that make sense?
Yes. That's the intellectual version of it. That's like the logical piece, but that's not the emotional side. So
right.
It just depends. It's like, sometimes we just need someone to validate our perspective. Sometimes that's enough. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we need the emotional piece to be touched on. Sometimes that's all we need. So it's like, mm-hmm. I think every scenario requires a different kind of repair. So it's like, I wish I could just kind of put it in the box of like, oh, this is what you, I know
just
that's what
you're
trying to get to, Jeremy. I know you're taking us.
Like hypothetically, if I was involved in a discussion with an emotional woman, and hypothetically, I've totally screwed up. Hypothetically, what's the one that, like, the magic solution, right? Yes. But I think you've raised an important point, which is if you're the one that's presenting the, if you're feeling invalidated, if you're feeling hurt or disrespected, and you're starting a conversation with your partner, I think it's really important to clarify how they can win. And I say win, but that means like, what do you need? Like I often say that to, you know, hypothetical women that I'm hypothetically dating, but it's like, how can I support you right now? Like, what do you need? Right. Yeah. Like, and what I'm basically saying is like, I want to win. Help me win. Like, do you need to be heard? Do you need to brainstorm a solution? Do you need a hug? Do you need me to say, I'm sorry? Do you need, like, help me?
Yeah.
Cause I'm often clueless, and I don't know about the majority of other men in this country, but I feel like there's a couple more out there that are often clueless. It like
there's
can't pick up on the undertones or the emotional signals of like, yeah. So helping your partner win. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think, and it's like what you said, it's first of all, you have to be with somebody that has that self-awareness to know what they want. Sometimes they don't know what they need in the middle of that.
And that's, you know, okay.
So it's like, I wish we all always knew, but sometimes we don't. But it's like, I don't think you can ever lose by telling somebody that is having an emotional experience that your feelings are so important to me. I really care about you and what's happening for you. I don't care. I'm not going to say this right. I honestly don't even know what to say to help you right now, but I just want you to know that I'm here and I really, really care. And I want to try. I want to keep trying until you feel better. So it's almost like, because, you know, what you're describing is the thing that happens to a lot of men from my experience, is they go into that part of their brain. Okay, first of all, a lot of shame starts to come up, which is normal.
You just freak out.
You freak out. I want to solve this problem. I need to solve this problem. Yeah. I don't want to feel what I'm feeling. And so part of it is, are you trying to solve it to not feel what you're feeling? Because a woman can, I want to be mindful of gender. We can feel that. And sometimes that can trigger us and amp us up even more. It's like, this isn't about me. You just don't want to feel what you're feeling.
Yeah.
But it's also, it's just acknowledging where you are. That can be super helpful. You know, that part of us, I can say, man, I'm so lost right now. Like the parts of me that when my partner acknowledges those things is when I start to soften. Like, I don't know what to do. I'm stuck. I really wish I can figure it out. And I'm automatically, he's so vulnerable with me right now. He's meeting me in my vulnerability, and something magical happens. But it's really hard because it does require us to feel a level of shame that can be unbearable, Jeremy.
Yeah, no, I'm aware. And I think we're kind of dancing around this idea of holding space, it sounds like, right? So
it does.
Maybe we can just give a little overview of what that is and how you do it, why it's important. That be all right?
Yeah. So holding space is something that comes up a lot. And I think it's, I always say, it's like, we really have to take off this notion of doing this perfectly, of like feeling like we have to be like these gods and goddesses that just, you know, are sitting in a room facing our partner, eye gazing and just listening to them, you know?
Yeah.
It's hard. And I think it's like important to acknowledge, like, yes, if our partner is sharing something really uncomfortable, we can't just sit through that for 20 minutes and not have a reaction. That's not normal. That's not healthy. That's not realistic. And it's setting us up to fail. It really is. So what we can do is, okay, if I'm sharing something vulnerable with you, Jeremy, and you're starting to get triggered, right? Like, okay, it's like, it's enough. You can always say, hey, you know, can you just hold my hand? Can we just take a little break? I'm here. This is getting, you know, intense for me, but I'm totally here. And acknowledging that you might need something in the middle of your space holding. You're not a robot. You can have needs even as you're holding space for someone else. Can we quote that? That is so important.
That's so important. You should do a post about that.
Yeah, I'll make a note of this. It's really important. You can have needs even as you're holding space for somebody else. You can ask for reassurance too. You can ask to take a break. You can let them know, hey, this is becoming really overwhelming. Can we stop here? That doesn't make you a bad space holder. And if you have a partner that's guilting you, you know, if you have no capacity to hear anything, or let's say you have a partner that is you think that they're just sharing what they're saying, but they're doing a lot of blaming and attacking in the way they're actually expressing, you can stop them. Like, hey, I want to hear you, but I really need you to say that differently. Can you please not criticize me as you're saying that, because I'm going to lose you. You're going to lose me. So it's like, I want to support people to have these challenging conversations and to be able to share, but they also have to be open to the feedback of their partner. This is a collaborative experience. We're not just narcissistic solo individuals that just get to dump. That's not okay.
Yeah. I think it's so important. And the thing that pops into my head was that oftentimes, I think as a man, maybe my old story is, but I'll see tears on a woman and I'll be like, she's crying. This is bad. I need to fix it. Right. Or she's angry. Oh shit. Right. And so just reiterating that there's nothing wrong with feeling any kind of feeling. There's nothing actually wrong with anger. I think where the problems arise is how we deal with that anger. So anger's cool. Like, be mad at me. But that does not give you the green light to call me names and bring up shit from my past and try to make me feel bad because you're feeling bad. Like, I think that's one of those lines of holding space boundaries.
Absolutely.
Being like, hey, I get that you're really mad right now. And I get that I totally screwed up. But like, you don't get to talk to me like that. You know?
Absolutely. And I'll tell you, like in the beginning of my relationship, when I had a lot of trauma coming through, I used to blame and criticize my partner a lot. And the most helpful thing that he did for me was to actually set those boundaries. It wasn't easy, but it actually helped kind of like orient me, like, whoa, wait a minute, this is actually not good for me. Not only just for him, but it's like him saying, I need you to say it differently. Or what's happening for you right now? Because you're focusing a lot on me. What's going on for you? Because sometimes, again, we project, we go into this state. So absolutely, for the men listening, I know that a lot, we're in this weird time in our culture where I think men have this expectation that they should just take it, right? Okay, all this stuff, let me just take it. Makes me a good partner if I could just hear all of this. But it's not sustainable. Your partner
And vice versa too. Like oftentimes the men I feel like in culture and society are broadly associated with rage, right? Because we don't talk about things, we bury them, we hide them, they fester, and then suddenly there's an eruption, right? Or profanity and name calling and all the things. And like, that's not okay either. Like,
absolutely.
Nobody has any right to treat you like that.
No.
It reminded me of this quote, anger is just sad's bodyguard. You heard that before?
I have.
Yeah. I don't know who said it, but it reminds me of that, of sometimes when I'm dealing with somebody that's really angry, I am reminded that there's an underlying sadness there. And it helps me to be more compassionate or empathetic. Like, the anger is kind of like a bodyguard that's just defending the tender heart underneath that is experiencing sorrow or grief of some kind.
Yeah. And I think it's healthy, especially for women who have been so socialized to not be in touch with their anger, to allow themselves to feel that anger, even as maybe that, you know, again, healthy anger is not directed at somebody, but it's giving ourselves access to feel it. And it usually, it softens right away. Rage has a more, an emotion that it's like, it doesn't go away after you express it. It's like kind of still lingers and it can have a violent component or like actually wanting to do something, because feeling that anger can be very empowering for women in particular. Mm-hmm. know, because otherwise we'll just get depressed or sad and, you know, kind of shrink up into that more shame place if we don't have access to it. But again, it has to be delivered in a way that's not attacking somebody. It's just, that's not okay.
Yes. I think one of the simplest things people can do to deal with anger is like go to a boxing class. Like do push-ups until your arms ache, like jump in a cold water shower and scream at a canyon or whatever. Yeah. Like get it out. There's nothing bad about anger necessarily. Yeah. It's just anger. It's just a thing.
It's just a feeling like the other feelings. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. It's hard though when your partner is angry with you.
Oh God, it's the worst.
Really, it's really hard.
I'm not saying it's easy.
I don't want you to be ever mad at me. My partner in the beginning of our relationship, he's like, I just want you to be happy and thrilled all the time. I'm like, honey, I get it. I really get it, but that's just not realistic. And you know, he's like, I know. He's like, I have to allow myself to let you be angry with me. And I'm like, I had to learn that he also struggles with this. So this is a two-way street here that, you know, even just letting him know, hey, I'm mad at you, but I still love you. I'm pissed at you, but I love you. I'm not going anywhere, you know? So it's like, what is the reassurance that our partner also needs to hear so they can stay present to our anger or our hurt? And so it's about, again, this takes time, you know, this takes a while, especially if you're like we're in a new relationship to really learn what those sensitivities are. Like, what could somebody say to you, Jeremy, when let's say your partner or somebody you're with is upset with you, right? They're hurt, they're angry. Yeah. What could they simultaneously say in the middle of that that could calm your nervous system down and reassure you?
Yeah. Well, hypothetically, about two nights ago.
Okay.
So based on past relationships as well, one of the things that I love is, hey, look, we're okay. Mm. You know, we're good. I'm not leaving. Mm. Right? I'm here. Like I'm not going anywhere. And like right? Just then let the fire out. Like, but that reassurance that for me as like an anxious person that is fearful of losing someone that I really care about and is dealing with the guilt and shame of knowing that I did something that wasn't in my highest integrity or that was kind of fucked up or whatever, to just hear that, like, hey, you're not going to lose me, but we need to talk about a couple things and I need you to hear me. Like that one little sentence is really powerful. Mm-hmm. And on the other side of that, when we talked earlier about sharing vulnerably, one of the greatest sentences you can say to a man, at least from my small sample size of male friends and the things that I've read, is, I'm really proud of you. Mm. Of like, I'm really proud of you for showing up in that way. Like, I'm really proud of you for sharing that. Like, and thank you. Like that gratitude and pride for me, at least personally, and I know several of my friends, is like a magic little elixir of like, I did a good thing. I did a brave thing. Because I feel like deep down, most men, we want to be good boyfriends. We want to be good husbands. We want to be the best version of ourselves that we can be. We really want to make our partners proud. Mm. We really do.
Yeah.
And it's challenging when we don't know exactly how to do that. And it's challenging when we don't know the answer or the solution and we get frustrated. And it's a really beautiful thing to hear, hey, you know, I'm really proud of you, or I'm not going anywhere. Like, overall, we're good, but like, we need to learn from this so this doesn't happen again.
I love that. I think what you just said is going to really resonate with a lot of people, Jeremy. I mean, most men that I speak with are definitely wanting to know that they're still loved, or we still see them in high regard in spite of what's happening right now in this moment, because it can just catapultize everything else and just take over our brain. Mm-hmm. And that's why it's okay that we all need messages, that we all need, again, this goes, you know, into the other conversation of like, we've been so socialized to be so self-sufficient and independent, but it's like, good luck, man. We're going to be living islands if we're just claiming that we don't have these kind of needs. We're just going to go from one relationship to another and never acknowledge that, you know, we have a nervous system. We're in a relationship with two nervous systems, or three or four if you're not, you know, polyamorous. Yeah. And if we're not tending to those things to soften them, we lose the person. They're not available to us. They're gone.
Totally. And another thing I've learned the hard way, unfortunately, is in terms of holding space and having conversations. Oftentimes, if I am sleepy, tired, hungry, or thirsty, I just cannot do a really great job at holding space, having conversation, communicating feelings, cultivating intimacy, all of it. Because I'm thinking about eating some calories.
Yeah.
Right?
So what if you had a partner come to you the next morning after you had a night of sleep, came to you with a bowl of food, water, and she provided it. She's like, all right, Jeremy, I'm ready for you.
I mean, anybody that brings me food is like automatically my hero.
I think
it goes to this idea of having a plan in place to deal with conflict before the conflict thrusts itself into your relationship. Like, how do we fight? Like in this relationship, like how do we disagree? How do we resolve our disagreements? Like what is okay? What is not okay? Because it's really difficult to do that in the moment, right? If there are no rules to the disagreement ahead of time.
What are the boundaries? What are the agreements? What are the no-go zones? You know, if I need a time out, I need you to leave, like not come after me and let me, you know, not
like
chase
me. We have
me
a safe word, right? Is there a safe word that we can just pause this? What do you think is the secret to having a healthy disagreement?
The secret to having a healthy disagreement is being really aware of your partner's sensitivities. And even like what you said, pausing when it starts to get too much, giving yourself permission to not make that a bad thing. And actually that break, you know, when you go too long into a fight, it just creates... and a repair. I want to also acknowledge the importance of things that are not being able to be dealt with in the moment. Maybe you take a break and you're like, let's get back to this later or tomorrow, to both acknowledge the things that were hurtful to the other person and do the repair. Otherwise, it goes into our long-term memory. And that's when we start ruminating about something that's not resolved. Mm-hmm. And then we start to see our partner in a certain way and we build up defenses. And it just creates an environment where we become less and less available to whoever we're in a relationship with. So that repair and that ability to see and respond to our partner's sensitivities. If I'm in a fight with you, Jeremy, if I'm in an argument with you, now that I know that your sensitivity is that, you know, that fear of being abandoned, oh my God, it's like information to my ears. I'm going to be super careful that my language is sensitive to that. Whatever I say, and if I do say something that makes you feel threatened, which I'm going to, it's going to happen because it's just natural, I'm going to be very quick to being like, okay, shit, Jeremy, I'm so sorry. I totally did that thing. I probably scared you. I'm here. I'm very aware that I did that, but I'm totally here.
Yes.
Speaking to that.
Yeah. And then those red flags earlier that we talked about, if you know those things about me and you choose to weaponize them and say things like, hey, you know, if this keeps up, I'm out of here.
Mm-hmm. That's a threat.
That's a threat.
Totally. Very threatening. No, God,
no.
That's
not healthy.
No.
But so that's an example of those kind of very subtle red flags that can kind of show up in discussions or in relationship that in the moment they're challenging to identify and to deal with because we're feeling so much.
Totally. And let's really take in consideration that it takes time when you're in a new relationship with someone for all of these things to come up. And it can be very anxiety provoking because you don't know it yet. So it's like there's so much mystery and like you're still figuring each other out and you're like, shit, I'm out of here. This is too much, you know?
Yeah, precisely. And I think, I mean, the way I approach many things is just as a scientist of like data collection. Hmm. Like, give me data. Like, give me information that I can use to communicate with you, to love you better, to be better in bed, to be more generous, just all the things. Like, just help me win. I keep going back to that idea. Like, help me win. But one very easy way to do that is to share, like, what feels good, what feels bad. Yeah. Things to say, things not to say, things to do, things to try to not do so much, right? And for me, it's like this iterative process of learning how to be better, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. Like for me, like I have a sensitivity when somebody makes fun of me in a certain kind of way. I just like, or sarcasm, like, like it just, it hurts me because I'm very sensitive to energy and I can feel it when somebody's being really playful and I can feel it when somebody's taking a jab. And if I tell somebody that and they're like, no man, just be, don't take it. And it's like, oh hell no, we're about to get down right now.
That's amazing.
It's hurtful. cool. And yeah, if the other person's intentions were good and kind, if they're not willing to see, wow, this person must have history here. And if I don't kind of bring myself down to really acknowledge mm-hmm. their sensitivity, then I'm not being a fair partner. And that person can also say, hey, you know, I really just would love if you can acknowledge that my intentions were actually not bad. Mm-hmm. That's fine. You can ask for that. You might want to wait on that, you know?
Yeah.
But it's like an evolving, like both people are speaking to and coming up with what's needed in order to regulate both partners simultaneously.
Yeah. What would you say to somebody listening that is kind of hearing lots of new ideas and insights on this conversation and they want to move forward and change a few things in their current relationship, but say they've been married for 10 years and they're kind of stuck in the same routines and whatnot. And their partner is kind of like, why do we need to change? Everything's fine. Mm. But how do you start to initiate some of these things into your existing relationships?
It's a beautiful question. Such an important one, because it's easy for me to just say, you know, demand couples therapy, or, you know, yeah, if they don't do it, just get out. You know, it's like, okay, let's be realistic. That's probably not the first solution we want to go towards. Mm. No, I would say, really focus on bringing something new, a new energy in yourself, a new vulnerability in yourself for a while. You know, maybe make 5 or 6 attempts to really show up differently in the middle of conflict with your partner, or go out of your way to praise something that you might normally miss, and do something in a way that can actually have your partner notice that, wow, my partner is really trying. This isn't just a one-time thing. They're making effort to really shift our dynamic, because then you have leverage. You can come back to them, be like, hey, you know, the last 2 months or the last month, I've been really trying. I don't know if you notice, but I've been really making effort to see you, to hear you, to bring something different, because I really care about our relationship a lot. And I don't want to put this all on you. Obviously, I have a really huge part in this. Mm-hmm. And I don't think if they're meeting you, then beautiful. But if they're not, then you could let them know. I'm realizing that I'm not being met here. I really need you to try too. You know, I want to feel like we're both making effort. What can we do about this? Starting with that conversation, seeing how they respond. If there's nothing, if there's no, then we want to take some boundary steps. I really think we need to get support. I don't think that we're going to, and make it about the relationship. I think this is, you know, one of the things whenever I speak about bringing therapy or, you know, counseling to a relationship, don't just make it about the partner. Frame it in the way that it's about the relationship. I don't mm-hmm. think our relationship is going to, you know, it's going to last if we don't do it this way. I really care about us, rather than you. You're doing this wrong. Mm-hmm. I need you to be different, you know? So sometimes just that framing alone can ignite something that your partner can be like, okay, wow, this isn't just about me. This is about doing something that's going to nourish our partnership. So those are some ideas that come to me for people that have been together a little bit longer.
I love that. That idea of the way I describe it to people is, I have my shit, you have your shit, and then there's our shit. That's like the relationship stuff.
Totally.
And I think seeing it as a totally separate entity, like a puppy or something that you've got to nourish and you have to feed and you have to take care of that relationship. It's not like some automated thing that just blooms, right? Ooh. With neglect and things like that. I love that phrasing.
Thanks, Jim.
What have we not covered? I feel like we've talked about so many things.
We went all over. It was perfect.
Is there anything that we've missed that you're feeling passionate about that people need to know, or that we forgot to touch on? Or
I would just say that the two keys that I would offer for people that are wanting to kind of figure out a way to have healthy vulnerability would be like, for the people that are more anxious, that lean on the more anxious, that tend to overshare, is to really develop a practice of making space for more space, and actually paying attention to, okay, if I'm vulnerable once or twice, pay attention to if I'm being met, and not just keep sharing and sharing and sharing, so you can actually see if the other person is willing to meet you, so it's not a one-sided connection, or you're not just kind of holding on just to hold on. You want this person to be in this with you. And then on the flip side, for people that identify more with avoidant, is again, practice little baby steps of being more vulnerable and sharing and seeing if somebody responds in a healthy way. Sometimes just knowing that those are different can help people, okay, identify more with this. Oh, I don't share. Maybe I need to share more, rather than bundling us all up with just, I need to just be more vulnerable to have connection. So I hope that that's helpful.
Yeah. And I think I would just add to that, be gentle.
Yeah.
Just be gentle with yourself, be gentle with your partnership and your partner, and recognize that you've got decades of momentum behaving and believing in a certain way, and that it's going to take a bit of time to turn things around or to change things, right? And that's totally okay. And that's totally normal. When the first time you go and try to be vulnerable or try to bite your tongue or whatever, and you don't get it right, that's also totally normal. And it takes practice, and it's a dedicated discipline required over time to slowly turn things into the life that you want to live. And that's okay. So that idea of gentleness, I think I'm a real big fan of lately.
I love that. Absolutely. Life will always keep giving us more and more opportunities to practice this stuff. There'll always be more.
Yeah. And they show up in the ugliest packages or the most unopportune moments. Like, really? You say that right now as we're dressed and ready to go to the wedding. Like, really, man?
Yeah.
Sylvie, you're a gem. Where can people find you?
I would say the biggest hub would be just my Instagram page. That's where I post stuff. I do lots of live sessions, and I give lots of free content and practical tools away there.
Yeah. What's your Instagram handle?
So it's at Sylvie Koukassian, SylvieKoukassian.
Yes. And your Instagram is really good. You're offering like lots of free advice and ideas and insights. I also know that I'm just going to keep plugging your stuff because I think you're great, but you have some online programs and courses that you do.
I do. Yes. So I have three different ones. I have one that's for practical communication for people that want to understand what their defenses are and want to start speaking in a more effective way in their relationships. And then I have a boundaries program that I've created with my own partner as we've evolved and figure out boundaries in our own relationships and really providing lots of scripts for real life scenarios. And then we have a couples conflict to connection program, which is like the best of the best of both of our coaching and therapy practices combined. That's super helpful for, I mean, all kinds of tools, masculine and feminine dynamics, attachment styles, and all kinds of communication tools that we have there.
Love it. It's so important, the work that you're doing. I think more and more people are understanding that relationships matter, that we all are in them, that we all have a whole lot to learn, right? And it's vital for us to just continue to do this work, make our lives all better.
Yeah, I mean, we're in it together. Me and my partner say it all the time. We're learning and evolving, and it's not it takes time. And anyone that's doing this work is extremely courageous. And I'm just always so grateful when I see people that are maybe new to this kind of self-development world, and they're taking that first leap. And I'm just almost like, yes, it's amazing.
Yeah, exactly, right? So what are, on that vein, are there any books that you recommend for somebody that's kind of wanting to learn more about relationships, but doesn't want to read a textbook or
Want to read a textbook?
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to read a textbook, but like, like not an academic thing, but like, are there any books out there that you love that you're like, hey, yeah, read, like Attached, for example, I feel is one that.
That's a beautiful one. That's probably my most recommended book. Then there's also Wired for Love by Stan Tatkin. That's fantastic. And then there's another one that he has called Wired for Dating by Stan Tatkin as well. They're both about the attachment styles. They give a lot of real life scenarios that you can relate with. And then for boundaries, there's a book called Where to Draw the Line by Anne Catherine. That's really superb, which will help you understand where you might need boundaries in different kinds of scenarios. And I love it. It's a really great one.
Rad. I will include links to those in the show notes. So if you're listening, you can just click on the show notes after and check them out. Sylvie, you're such a gem. This was a lot of fun.
Thank you. So much fun.
I just love your work. Anytime you want to come back on, vibe about all the things.
I'd love to.
I was going
to
say my house is your house. My podcast is your podcast.
Look, I'm Middle Eastern. My house is always open for people. Yeah. So I know how that goes.
Awesome. Yeah, I just, yeah, thank you for your time. Thank you for being you. Thank you for all of your knowledge and wisdom. I think it's just wonderful, and you're wonderful.
Thank you
and,
so much.
And I think this will connect and help a lot of people. And thank you.
I appreciate it. Thank you, Jeremy.
All right. We just totally did a podcast.
Yay!
So, I mean, that was great, right? She's so good. She's so knowledgeable. I encourage you to follow her on Instagram. I encourage you to check out her website and her courses. She's just a lovely genius, really. I've also included in the show notes links to those books that she recommended, as well as a few other things. So do check those out. And as usual, thank you for you. Thank you for being here. If you have someone in your life that you think would enjoy this podcast, please do share it, send it along. That helps us to get out the word into the world, make a big positive impact. And that's what it's all about, right? Anyway, until next time, I adore you. I think you're great. I'm so glad that you're here. You're wonderful. Have a good day. Have a good life. Keep smiling.